You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia this week. And this is episode 360 of the Columbia Calling podcast. This is the episode that many of you have been waiting for. This is the episode where the power behind the throne, the person who keeps me walking, as they say in Spanish, literal translation, walking in line, caminando derechito, yes, my wife, Alba Torres, the wonderful Alba, will be on the show talking a little bit about Colombia, her upbringing, our relationship, and indeed being in the tourism industry at this time, and some of the stories that we have gathered over the years together in these adventures. So I'd like to say thank you to all of those of you out there who have submitted questions. There were quite a number, and we chose some of the more pertinent ones. There was Julian in Germany, and Jana in London, Izzy in Surrey, England, Joey, who was in Canada, Jonathan in Tunja, Boyacá, Jorge Bella, who's in Panama, and some others, Daniel Buitrón here in Colombia. So there were all sorts of questions coming across, and quite internationally so, and I hope to be able to get Alba on the show again if this is well received, of course. Episode 360, I should be reprimanded for not having her on the show before this period. So we're here in a lockdown in Bogota, and things seems to be intermittently locked down, open up, locked down, open up. Can we say that Colombia is dealing with this situation well? I don't know. I'll leave that open to you. We're going to have to do a podcast at some point in the future about the political situation in the country. And of course, I'm always open to hearing from you about potential future interviewees. Thank you to all of you out there who pledge a little bit of cash on the Patreon campaign for the Columbia Calling podcast. As little as $2 a month, you can help sustain the podcast. If you give a little bit more, of course, you end up getting some goodies like t-shirts, mugs, stickers, tote bags, and so on. Just look up patreon.com, Columbia Calling. So that's that. I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Emily Hart again with the excellent newscast she provides us every week. And then we'll be back with my wife, Alba. Well, to giving you a bit of the lowdown and dirty about being married, a bicultural relationship. For those of you interested in this story, it's a good conversation. I'd like to know how you feel once you've heard it. Did I come off okay? Did she grill me terribly? Am I a dreadful person? Give us some feedback. Of course, we're on Twitter at Columbia Calling, and we're on Facebook, and you can email us at columbiacalling@gmail.com. So thank you again. I'll be right back.
I'm Emily Hart, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for the week of January 25th, 2021. Colombia's President Iván Duque has welcomed incoming US President Joe Biden, saying he has every hope of working hand-in-hand with the new leader, whom he sees as a friend of Colombia and with many objectives in common, including climate change, the defence of democracy, and the fight against terrorism. Duque cited the 2 centuries of diplomacy between the 2 countries, calling it a historic relationship. One of Colombia's most celebrated human rights defenders, Francia Márquez, also sent an open letter to the new US Vice President, Kamala Harris. In the letter, as well as emphasising the ongoing rural violence and killings of community leaders, she criticised the US war on drugs and its prohibitionist approach as a failure, which has only served to exacerbate the humanitarian crisis and the armed conflict in the country. She pled that US resources allocated to Colombia would be focused more effectively on supporting initiatives for improving lives and on the effective implementation of the peace process. The FARC political party have voted to change their name to Comunes, meaning Commons, 1 year ahead of their second participation in national elections, under the new slogan, United, Building a New Colombia. By changing the name of their party, the group seeks to dissociate themselves from the dissident groups of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, known as the FARC, which is still considered a foreign terrorist organization by the US government. Linda Diaz Romero, a social leader, has been murdered in her home in the village of Guaramo in Cáceres. With Linda Diaz, there are now 14 social leaders murdered so far this year. Although the perpetrators of the murder are unknown, community leaders have denounced the presence of illegal armed groups such as Los Caparos, the Clan del Golfo, the ELN, and dissidents of the FARC, who are fighting for control of the territory. There have now also been 6 massacres in 2021, including one at the weekend in the rural area of Buga, Valle, which left 5 young people dead. The Department of Nariño, with intensive care units at 98% capacity, is also facing a spike in violence by illegal armed groups. This week alone, there were reports of the disappearance of 11 people and the displacement of 99 families, more than 250 people. There are no less than 15 illegal groups in the department, and in many cases, communities do not even know which group is behind the violence they suffer. There have now been more than 2 million cases of COVID-19 in Colombia, with 51,000 dead in a population of 50 million. There is so far no trace of the new strains from the UK, South Africa, or Brazil. At least 132,000 people currently have COVID-19, including the country's defence minister, whose condition is critical but stable. He is on a ventilator. ICUs in Bogota reached 100% capacity this week as the second wave peaked, with similar figures in cities across the nation. However, Medellin's mayor took to Twitter to announce the end of the second wave in the city, but warned that only a mass vaccination plan could avoid a third wave. More than 100 of Colombia's new ventilators have been found unusable. The governor of Cundinamarca asked for authorization to use 130 new ventilators to expand ICU capacity in the department. But it was found the Chinese brand of ventilators had reported 34 serious incidents, 6 of which had resulted in the death of patients. The ventilators had been allowed into the country due to the state of emergency last year, but will not be used. There is mounting concern about the fact that Colombia's authorities have yet to reveal the start date of the national vaccination plan, while many other countries in Latin America have begun their programs already. The Ministry of Health announced they hope to begin by February, though nothing concrete has been put in place. Foreigners are now being deported for breaking COVID-19 measures. Around 600 have now been expelled from Colombia for various violations of the rules. That was this week's newscast. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back. This is the final segment of episode 360, the episode which you've all been waiting for. A lot of you have asked to learn a little bit more about our relationship, myself and my wife, Alba Torres. And so, well, you know, I have to basically conform to what you're looking for. And here we have it, episode 360. I'm a bit embarrassed it's taken this long to have her on the show. And she's actually quite excited about it. I'm pretty scared what might come up. And I've been referring to this show as the roast of Richard McCall, because I feel that she might, you know, unearth all of the knives and clubs in order to punish me for 10 years of marriage, because it's going to be 10 years this year in 2021. But can I get a great big warm hello from Alba to all of my listeners all over the world?
Hello, everybody. I'm Alba. I'm Richard's wife. Today we are going to talk about our marriage and our life here in Colombia.
Perfect. And I know you're waiting for this. I know you've all been so interested in this. And I've got questions that a lot of you sent in. So thank you to those of you who sent in the questions. But maybe we'll start with, who is Alba? Who is, who is Alba? Let's hear a little bit about your background and who you are.
Okay. Originally, I'm from Barranca Bermeja. That is a city in Santander. There is a big refinery. So I was born and raised in Barranca.
Mm-hmm. You're Santanderiana, and only Colombians and people who live here will know what that means.
Yes, people from my region are known for being bravos.
Let's say angry?
Yes, we are straight talkers.
Straight talkers, okay. It always sounds like you're, people always say that women or men from Santander are kind of angry and forwards.
We are not angry. We like to talk straight to a point because people in Bogota, they tend to make circles around a conversation. They don't go straight to a point. So Santanderianos, we are very different. For example, we don't use a lot diminutivos.
Ito, like so, en un minutico, you don't say, you say en un minuto.
Yes.
And you won't say, el ajiaquito.
For example.
Like. Yeah, all right. But, yeah, you know, Santanderianos are not bravas. They might just sound that way. But if you talk to a Bogotano and say, yeah, no, I'm married to a Santanderiana, and the first thing they go, uy! But it's not, I think there's a real benefit, and I say this through, at times, clenched teeth, but I would prefer to hear things to my face than spoken behind my back. And that's, you know, that's Santanderianos will say it to your face.
Yes, we are honest people. We do the best.
You're the best. Yeah, that's true. Okay. Now, Barranca Bermeja, some of you will have visited, and I would say probably a lot of you haven't. I've been there a number of times, and you and I have both taken English tourists and other European tourists up the river Magdalena from Barranca Bermeja to Mompós. But I'm going to refer to you as someone from the Magdalena River. You feel that very much in your identity.
Yes, I feel that I'm a person of the river, and I don't identify with someone who is from the interior or someone who is from the Caribbean coast. I feel I'm in the middle. Mm-hmm. I'm from the banks of the Magdalena River. For people who doesn't know the topography and the geography of the region, it's a Magdalena Valley. It's lowlands, and it's the land between the two Colombian cordilleras. Mm-hmm. So it's a hot place. It's very warm, very humid. It's the word is like Mompós, for people who knows Mompós.
And your family is all from the river.
Yes, my father is from a town called Gamarra in Cesar, very close to Norte Santander. And my mom is from Mompós.
So that's it. I mean, with maternal family in Mompós, paternal family in Cesar and southern Bolivar, and then you in Santander in Barranca Bermeja, this, you know, you are pure of the river. I mean, that's
yes.
Now, Barranca Bermeja is a city that's in the news, usually, unfortunately, for the wrong reasons. It's a city that has really faced violence over the years, and you spent all of your youth there until you were born there, up until you were 17, I think, or 18. How was it living a childhood against the backdrop of this violence?
Well, I have a happy childhood, but also in that time I didn't understand so much what happened around us with all the violence, first with the guerrilla in the town and second with the paramilitares in the town. But now I'm a grown up. I think I understand more what happened in that period in my life there, that we all this union strikes and with the guerrilla involved in all of them, with buses burning, the lockdowns in the city because of the someone was killed in the moment. In that moment, then with the massacres with the paramilitares. But it's something that you didn't think a lot every single day, but now I'm a grown up, I think, okay, that was a bad period, but for me wasn't so bad because I was enjoying with my family and my friends and all my neighbors in the moment because I grew up in a nice place. And I went to a good school. So for me, it wasn't so obvious.
Yeah, and you were young as well. Yeah. I mean, there's another thing. So you then, after that, you came to university in Bogota. studied economics at the Universidad de los Andes. Later on, we met, and then the rest is history. We met in Bogota. So maybe I can get on to some of the questions that my listeners, our listeners today, have kindly sent to us. And I wanted to sort of say, let's say a lot of the questions are cross-cutting in their themes and can refer to, you know, many of the same questions, but we will try to address as many as we possibly can. I'd like to say this one's from Yana Shevkirova. I think she's in London. But she says, what are the cultural differences in this, let's say, a bicultural marriage, Colombia married to an Englishman, a Colombian married to an Englishman? What would you say? And be nice.
No, for me, it's the religion. And practicing Catholic, and Richard, he's a Protestant. Mm-hmm. And I think when we start talking about religion, we can have a big argument. So for that reason, we don't talk a lot. We don't talk about religion in the house. So for me, that is the big difference. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we talk about if we are going to raise our children Catholic or Protestant. For now, I can say to everybody that we are raising them Catholic, but they are so young, so we are not introducing a lot in religion. But in the next couple of years, they are going to learn more about that.
And I think from my perspective, being brought up in Northern Europe and having the church driven out of me by too much church attendance, I'm in that sort of post-religious phase. So despite perhaps having, reservations about Catholicism, I think that's the most polite way of putting it, you know, Alba is a practicing Catholic, and this makes her happy. And we were married in a Catholic church in Cartagena. She had to get permission from, the priest in Chapinero to get a license to marry a non-Catholic. And part of that, contractually, was that our children had to be Catholics too, right?
Yeah, and well, the bishop he gave us a permission to for marry a not Catholic man, and he asked me, "Are you sure I'm going to marry this man?"
Yeah, are you sure you want to marry someone who's not a Catholic?
Yeah, because Richard he was like very upset the whole time, looking really bad. The bishop. And I was very embarrassed in that moment. So for me,
I behaved poorly.
Yeah,
in
really
front of
bad.
The priest in Chapinero.
He embarrassed me.
Yeah, I always think, you know, they are up there with this life of let's say sacrifice, and he was in his Gucci shoes and his nice top, and I was like, and there's this guy reading rules to me. Anyway, I have a problem with authority.
Yeah, but please don't start.
Yeah, well, let's not. Yeah, so there we go. There's a nice cultural difference for you there, Yana. Let's move on to the next one from Izzy and Farnham. Has said, what advantages are there to raising our two boys here in Colombia?
My family is one of the biggest advantage.
I would say it's an advantage, yes.
Yeah. Well, they don't live in Bogota, but when we are in Mompox, they are really close.
Very close. But I come from a very small family, and to see my two children growing up with all of this family around them, and I know it's not immediate family when we talk about aunts and great uncles and cousins and twice, three times, four times removed, but I never had that. So it's really wonderful to see that support network. And we don't live far from your sister here in Bogota and her husband, who is godfather to our first son, and that they are always seeking, the time to spend with our sons. And also, this is a family-oriented society in which we live here, and And that makes it pretty special from my perspective. So I don't know, is there something you want to add to that as well?
Yes, also that I am modern, I feel people are here in Colombia, they are friendly when they see you with kids. And also I met some wonderful women here who wants to share time with you, who wants to share all the concerns. And at the end, everybody feels the same, and everybody has the same problems about the parenthood. So for me, it has been a good experience, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then if we talk about, let's say, what about, what's it like being married to an Englishman? That's from Jonathan in Tunja. What's it like being married to someone like me?
Well, Richard is, I don't know how, if you can describe him in one word. But there are good days, or other days are not so bright. But he's a good guy. He's a person who cares about the others, and he's generous, and he likes make people happy, and so he's a good guy. Well, he's not so bad.
I'm not so bad.
He's not so bad.
My godmother refers to me as being quirky.
Yes, you are quirky.
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 Yes.
That's kind of lightweight eccentric.
Yeah, so. for that, who doesn't know that word, is like eccentrico.
Yeah, but I would say lighter than eccentric. Not quite there, but yeah, I would say quirky. But well, I thank you. I didn't get hammered in that one. That's all right. So I would say, on the whole, it's a positive experience being married to an Englishman.
Yeah, it's a good experience, and for me, enriched my life.
I think you are practicing that phrase. But I want to, if we talk about that, a difference between, let's say, an Englishman and a Colombian, I'd say that I'm not like chasing every woman all around. I mean, because that's the image that people have of like a Latino male.
And now to mention, I think it's funny because I trust on you and you trust on me. And sometimes, I don't know, it's because you have spent so much time here in Colombia that people think you are Colombian and they think you are going to behave like one Colombian. So sometimes they give me advice, oh, please don't let him alone with this lady because he's going to, maybe she can show some interest in her, or they say, no, he's married to me, he promised to God. So it's different though, how you approach an Englishman. It's different. I think more relaxed. I don't have to worry so much about if today I look like a supermodel, or if he's going to a party, he's going to behave badly. I don't have that worries. That is the truth.
That's really nice to hear. So I want to go to parties, please. But okay. So then there are other things as well. You know, we were talking about sort of challenges that, I mean, I like being around people and stuff, but there are things like, you know, I think you don't see me perhaps as the most cold, or I would say sort of introverted person, which seems to be the stereotype of English people here in Colombia.
Yes. Sometimes when I talk to the people, they have an idea what an Englishman is like. And in all those years, I'm trying to break in the stereotype that they can be cold or distance or they don't care about the others. And I say, it's not true. They are like us. They had the same worries. They had the same dramas in their family. It's similar to us. It's not that are like aliens. Like people think that you are from a different planet.
But sometimes, I mean, they look at me. It depends where you are. One of the things that made me laugh a lot is when we were in quarantine in Montpos last year for about 4 months. And, you know, Montposinos don't look at me anymore. You know, they know who I am. I'm the English guy who's sort of doing, you know, his things in Montpos. But we were getting naturists over from Magangue and Sincelejo, so the other side of the river, who'd never been to Montpos before. And they would stare at me in this, you know, lack of trust and this curiosity as to why there was a gringo, well, an Englishman, a foreigner in the town. And they did look at me.
Maybe they thought you are bringing the coronavirus.
I think they might have thought that because, of course, everyone around there thinks it's, you know, a foreign disease.
Yes, because at the beginning in Montpos, people thought the coronavirus was bring for foreigners.
Mm-hmm. It was brought by foreigners. But so, yeah, I think they certainly looked at me like an alien. And I get that, of course, in different parts of Bogota, too. And when I have reasonably good Spanish, and then sometimes people at a shop tender, maybe more humble origins, will just stare and be like, yeah. What on earth?
And also, they don't. Sometimes people doesn't think that you speak Spanish, and they look at me and ask me, do you think the señor would like blah, blah, blah? I say, he speaks Spanish. You can go and talk to him and ask him what he likes. And it's funny for me.
Do you think that is, I mean, because it bothers me when they do that, because of course I hear and understand, and I can hear someone saying, oh yeah, maybe. But do you think that's a reflection on, you know, maybe a more macho society as well?
Yes, maybe they think the women here had the role to solve everything around the men, to provide, I don't know, to organize all the house around the person, and they don't need to worry about any other things.
Mm, it's true. So let's move back to some of the questions as well. There's Julian in Germany has asked, are we thinking or would we consider moving to the UK at some point in the future?
Yes, we are going to move to UK, but not right now. We are thinking of moving in, I don't know how many years.
6 years?
In 6 years.
Seven, eight, something like that. When
when our older son is going to
go to high school. I think the idea is to internationalize them a little bit, you know, get them out of the Bogota bubble, Pomelo bubble.
Yeah, Bogota is good for him to a certain point, but we want him to have like a broad view about the world. It's not only a view about Rosales and Chico in Bogota. So, and I would like, he learns about the multiculturality.
Mm-hmm.
You can say that.
It's multicultural.
Multicultural.
London or England, yeah. I can understand that.
Yeah.
And I would like that too. And I think the benefits of, you know, not just having a British passport, but also using a British passport and the opportunities to learn a little bit about his other heritage. There's a question from Jorge Bella, who's in Panama, and I guess it's directed at me. Well, what are the challenges for a Brit joining a Colombian family, and what are rewards in this aspect? And I would say, you know, we've talked about the family, and I come from an incredibly small family and have been brought in to Alba's family as if I was one of their own. And for me, that's very special to have been accepted really, warts and all, for all of my eccentricities and my moodiness and everything else, they've accepted me. But I also think I've got an advantage in that. Alba and I have given my in-laws their only grandchildren and two little boys. So my mother-in-law is thrilled with that, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
She loves that there's two boys.
Yeah, now my parents see you like another son.
Yeah. It's really, really special. It really is. And I can call up my suegros and just chat to them. We have a very good relationship indeed. So that's something. And now we can move on a little bit because we got to change subjects a bit. We'll move on to Montbos and we'll move on to our hotel business. And those of you who listen to this podcast or follow me and us, and you'll know that we started in 2008 in Montbos with La Casa Amarilla, which started as a hostel but then moved into being a mid-range, I'd say upper mid-range now, a guest house. And in December 2019, we inaugurated the top-end San Rafael Hotel, which is, you know, a very, very special place. And I can say that we got 9.6 out of 10 this year on booking, so not something to be smirked at. So we've got a question from, and I don't know his real name, but it's Que Suerte is his I guess his Twitter name, and he says, the hotel business, why and how in the did we get involved in this? Why did we decide to pursue the hotel business? What are the challenges in owning a hotel or two in Colombia? Maybe you want to take this one.
No, I think you can start, Richard, explaining what was your first thought about Montbos, the first time you came to Montbos, because you were the one who had the idea to create the business, because at that moment I don't have any idea in my mind to open a hotel.
I'd been moving around a lot, and I was at a stage of my life when I was ready to put down roots. I guess you get to that, you know, and you get to a stage of a certain degree of maturity. And I had all this, you know, British pounds in the bank because I was moved from country to country and everything was paid for. And I just saw Montbos when I went there in Easter in 2007 as an incredible opportunity for investment. Knowing most of the colonial towns in Latin America, you know that they're going to go up in value if tourism is growing. In Colombia, there was a change taking place. So I thought, well, I can buy a house and either flip sale it or hold on to it and hope things improve. And then, you know, make some money, or you make my money work a little bit. And after buying the first half of what is now Casa Maria, which was itself a house, I figured, actually, you know what? Let's open the four rooms to guests. And the only people coming through the town were backpackers. And so that was the ideal market because it wasn't a restored house, so we didn't need to do so much to it. And I figured that I wanted the building to pay for itself. But then it snowballed out of control and we ended up buying loads of houses and restoring them. But it's been a great learning process, and has, you know, despite the pandemic putting brakes on everything, it's been a remarkable success story, wouldn't you say?
Yes, we have been there around 13 years.
Yeah. And so we opened up the second one, and you know, San Rafael, it's going really, really well. And Que Suerte is asking, is there anything we would have done differently?
Yeah, I would like Montbos could be closer and less hot.
We can't change those.
Yeah, we can change them. But sometimes the people underestimate how much effort has gone into organized international business of this kind in such a remote place. Mm. So for me, that is the hard part. And for you, Richard?
Well, yeah, I think that's the hard part too. Once we had a visitor, I think his parents were from New Zealand or somewhere, and he might have opened something up in Medellin. I can't remember what it was. Yeah. And And the parents were saying, oh, yeah, you know, how much difficulty this guy's had in getting the right products in Medellin.
A restaurant.
It was a restaurant.
I remember
I turned around and I just said, please don't make the same comparison to getting the right products in Montpos to Medellin. I mean, because we just don't get them in town. And my issue in the town is really the, you know, people not making good on their word. I'm very much, I guess I'm old fashioned in that. If you say something, you know, keep your word. And that disappoints me. And I think that's my, and we go back to culture, kind of a cultural clash between my sort of, I guess, Anglo-Saxon upbringing, mixing, you know, clashing against that of the sort of Caribbean laissez-faire, very much relaxed. I don't think people are deliberately not keeping their word, but it's a, more of a cultural thing. But I mean, you, Alba, you have a different, let's say we work together. I mean, we are the business owners, we are the business directors, managers, etc. But I would say that my side is kind of the public relations side and ensuring that people get, you know, understand where Montpos is and get it out there. You have a different role.
Yes, I'm the logistic and the person who do all the purchases. Mm-hmm. So for me, one of the big challenges is how to get the right products there. Mm. And is sometimes I had to call the truck to come here to our apartment that is full with all the products, with towels, with sheets and everything. Mm. Waiting in our living room.
Yeah.
And we had to send all the stuff, the soap, the coffee, all the things to Montpos. So I'm the person who is behind that. And also now we are taking all the bookings because it's sad to say, but sometimes our workers, they don't explain really well to the customers about the town, the service that we are selling. So in this time, we are taking
more control
about that. So yeah. Sometimes people call at midnight. So for me, I don't going to answer calls at that time. So sorry.
Yeah, no. I mean, what is it? Around 7 o'clock, we say, yeah, no more phone calls, something like that.
Yeah, that is my rule.
Yeah, I think it's a good rule too, because back in the day when we used to have our own apartment in the Casa Maria, you know, we had guests who would come out into the garden and see us on our balcony, which was within the house itself, and sort of wave at us and ask, well, I've got one more question about transport or something. You'd be like, you've sucked my time for the last 3 hours. You can't now see me enjoying a cold beverage on my balcony with my wife, need to, you know, to hunt me down again. So that was the impetus behind getting a different house and doing it up for our own house. But should we talk about some of the guests? Because, I mean, we won't name anyone. One of the realities is, and unfortunate realities, you tend to remember the worst, most challenging guests, so rather than the best. Can you remember any, or do you have something else you'd like to add?
Well, we have so many guests. Well, some people are really nice, others are not. Maybe we can talk about this lady who came to Montpos with her mother in law.
Oh, yeah, I know her name, but I'm not going to say it. Her future mother in law.
Yes, her future mother in law, yes. She was engaged to the son of this lady. They came to Montpos at the beginning of the hotel, and it was a half hostel and half hotel. Mm-hmm. She stayed with us like a 3 nights.
Yeah.
And the suegra came because she was to see Montpos, because, you know, Montpos is full with history, and also is a good place if you are a Catholic to visit, because of all the churches that are there. So they came together, the daughter-in-law, she met this really good-looking Englishman in the house.
It wasn't me.
No, okay. It wasn't Richard, it was another Englishman, and he invited her every night to have drinks and party.
Yeah.
So she run every night with him, like a Cinderella.
She escaped every night.
She escaped every night, yeah. But...
Well, there's more to the story, and it goes on. And what you have to picture is this is the voyage of where this lady and her mother-in-law get to know one another and become close. You know?
After the wedding.
Yeah.
Before the wedding. Sorry.
And so anyway, this young Bogotana, obviously, and the Englishman are off every night partying and drinking. It's a small town. There are no secrets. And doing whatever else they got up to. So, but what the lady would do to ensure that she could get out and enjoy Mompox's minimal Zona Rosa, a nightlife area, was she would bring a juice to her mother-in-law, future mother-in-law, each night as she was going to bed, but she would have slipped sleeping pills into the juice to ensure that her mother-in-law wouldn't wake up. And, you know, we found this out later. But one night she forgot, or there wasn't time to slip the sleeping pill into the juice. And the lady knew at what time the mother-in-law might wake up, because she has a weird sleeping pattern, I think. But the girl didn't get back in time, did she? I mean, what happened? Do you remember?
No, she came later.
Oh, she got back later, but the mother-in-law woke up and saw that she wasn't in her room, the girl, and so went round the hotel looking for her and ended up knocking on the manager's door. But what had happened is the lady knew that she'd got back late, saw that her mother-in-law had woken up, snuck into the manager's room and said, Carmen, who's our manager, it's so hot out there at the moment. You've got a good air conditioning unit in your room. Perhaps I could just lie down here in your room for a bit. And Carmen knew nothing about what was going on and said, of course, young girl, of course, my dear, lie down here.
She knows.
She knows, yeah. But then within minutes, the mother-in-law comes, knocks on the door and sees that her daughter-in-law is lying down there. And it's like, oh, very good. What a wonderful family hotel this is, and so on.
Thank you for taking care of my nuera.
Yeah, thank you for taking care of my daughter-in-law. And we got a letter from her, so the mother-in-law, saying how much she had enjoyed getting to know her future daughter-in-law and that she'd make a wonderful wife for her son. And we got an email from the young lady as well, saying that she had the best time in Mompox. But we know the truth. That's one of the good stories, though. I mean, it is a good story because it's a funny story. But we have both guests that are living and also deceased. Isn't that right?
Yes. We are going to share with you about the ghost in Casa Amarilla. Casa Amarilla was owned by my grandfather's cousin.
Yeah.
Her name was Anna Leonor. And Anna Leonor passed away without any descendants.
Mm-hmm.
So we have people who have seen her walking around the house. Mm-hmm. So... sometimes when she doesn't like some guests that are rude to us or people who are arrogant,
yeah,
I can say it.
And pretentious.
She doesn't like that kind of people. So she start doing some stuff like opening the taps,
mm-hmm,
and turning out the TVs, and turning out the lights also in the room.
At nighttime, right?
At nighttime. And we had some guests who had seen her and they can describe exactly how she looks like. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Down to the pearls around her neck.
Yeah, you know, the pearls and the grays. It's amazing how people knows about this lady because nobody's seen her before. How do you gonna know about her? For me, it's weird. No, I don't know how to describe that. Yeah.
A few years ago, I put the picture of her up in the office, and some people who saw her in the nighttime would come into the office and say, it was her, and they would point to the picture. So, but I don't think she's a bad person. I think she just reacts to bad people, you know, people who are perhaps insulting to us or just carrying some sort of negative energy, I think.
Yeah.
If we talk about the houses we've got, so the Casa Maria, you know, obviously was passed down to different members of the family and, you know, left the family. But it originally was part of your family's properties, your grandfather's cousin. San Rafael also, we only found out recently, right?
Yes, we found out San Rafael was owned by the first wife of the previous owner. She passed away without any children, and he had a second marriage. But she was one of my grandfather's aunts.
One of your grandfather's aunts?
Yeah.
So both of these houses that by absolute chance that we managed to get hold of actually belonged to your family in the past.
Yes, how do you know that?
I didn't know that, and this is something very, I think, Latin. Fue el destino, fue escrito. Was it destiny?
No, it wasn't destiny.
I think a lot of people have enjoyed this conversation. I think I've come out of it remarkably well. This has not been the roast of Richard McCall, thankfully. In fact, my wonderful, lovely wife here has said very nice things about me. I'm sure she could say some less nice things about me if she wanted to. And in fact, I know she could. But let's leave that for another time. Let's whet your appetite. But the final question then is from Daniel Buitron, and he's in Manizales. So that's here in the coffee zone. And he asks, how do you, Alba, put up with him?
Okay. This is a hard question. There's a lot of passion, and only God knows.
Only God knows. A lot of patience.
Yes, a lot of patience. Yeah, he can be a handful.
I am a handful. I'm not easy. I know that. I know I'm not easy. And thank you for putting up with me. Thank you so much. Well, this has been wonderful. I don't know, and I feel a bit bad that it's taken 360 episodes. Maybe you can tell me off later or now if you want for waiting 360 episodes.
You never invite me here before.
I never thought you wanted to come on, but now I'm hanging my head in shame. And well, that's it. I mean, you know, I hope you've enjoyed this show, and I think that Alba's done a great service, not only, you know, being on the show, opening her heart a little bit here and talking about our houses, our family, our concerns, the challenges. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you've enjoyed it, Alba.
Yes, thank you very much, Richard, for inviting me.
Okay, well, I promised to get you on before episode 460, another 100 episodes away. I will get you on before that. We'll have to think about that. And other people maybe can ask other questions for a later one. But not yet, but for a later one. Let me remind you again, and let me say thank you again to my darling wife, Alba, for her time today here. We've managed to have someone looking after our two children, two earthquakes, terremotos in the house. And it's been really fun to have this open dialogue. Can I remind you all that we are on Patreon, where you can sponsor us, the Columbia Calling podcast, for as little as $2 a month and ensure the financial, the economic viability of this podcast. And I'm glad you've enjoyed this. Next week's podcast, we'll be talking to Rafael of the Sudaca beer company in San Felipe. So we're going to be talking about artisanal beer, craft beer in Bogota. And then the week after that, we've got Tom Fielding from the Latin America Bureau talking about the book on mining in South America. So thank you so much for listening. Follow me, Colombia Calling, on Twitter, Facebook, and so on. Write us a message, and I do answer within about a day. Anyway, thank you again, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.